a candidate, what are the characteristics of a good partner? This is a part of a series of lessons that I have preached in meetings at different places. So I'm going to go ahead and deal with this lesson, and then there may be some others coming later. First of all, a person must have the right to be married. Not everyone has this right because they may have forfeited it by their behavior. Those who have the right to be married or to get married are those who have never been married before, number one. Number two, those whose partner has died. And number three, those who have put away a guilty party because of fornication. But in this lesson, we want to concentrate on the things to look for in a partner. So this lesson will primarily concern those who are not married. And so mostly that will be our young people. But I want you to consider these lessons carefully. The first major characteristic that I would point out is that one, he or she needs to be a Christian. We list that as the first requirement. Thinking from the standpoint of one who is getting married, what should you look for in a partner? First, that he or she be a Christian. Trying to be a Christian is hard enough that we do not need to burden ourselves with the trials of dealing with a mate that is not a Christian. Now, this is not meant to be taken as some kind of a slam or a criticism of you if you are married to someone who's not a Christian. But nevertheless, I want to speak on these things and warn you about some things that you need to know if you were to seek to marry one who is not a Christian. So this is the first point that we make to one who is thinking of marriage, and that is we do not need to burden ourselves with the trials of dealing with a mate that's not a Christian. Now, although it does not happen every time, I have known some real horror stories about what an unbelieving mate may do to block his wife from serving God. I realize there have been a lot of marriages that have taken place like this that wound up happy, that things turned out all right. But I have known personally the other kind as well. I have seen a man take his wife out of his baby's arms and not let that baby go with his wife and to test her to see if she was going to church anyhow, if she was going to worship God anyhow. I've seen that happen. And I've seen and heard of other things like that happening that are they're very bad to endure, very bad to go through. So when you are getting married, when you're marrying someone who's not a Christian, you may be getting yourself in for something like that. Unless you know the person exceptionally well, that's something you need to consider. And then if that doesn't happen, if things work out and you have a good relationship, always, a Christian partner is going to have to face the fact that the partner that he or she loves so dearly is lost. And should they die, they would have no hope whatsoever of heaven. Now, it's hard to live like that. It is hard for you to live enjoying your hope of heaven while you're realizing that that person that you love so much is lost at this point, day after day. You know, I know people that worry about partners that have illness, problems of various kinds, but how much sorer would be the worry about a partner who is lost? It is a heavy burden to bear to have one whom you love and about whom you cannot be confident of their salvation. More often, by far, than not, children that are born to such a marriage are lost. There are exceptions, I know, but more often by far, children that are born to such a marriage will be lost. The reason why is because over and over again, torn by the religious differences between mama and daddy, they either become nothing or they become members of the denomination of the unbelieving partner or of the partner whom they marry. So that's something else that you have to be aware of. Children are going to come. What are those children going to be? You say, well, right now, you know, love covers it all. But when children come along, love will not cover it all. When children come along, there will be a decision that will have to be made. And as I said, very often what happens is the children wind up nothing because the children are torn not to go with daddy but with mama. Or they're torn not to go with mama but with daddy. And as soon as they get old enough, sometimes the way they solve that is to go with neither one. So over and over that happens. If that doesn't happen, more commonly they will go with the one who is the strongest and the most diligent in their beliefs. Here's another thing you have to be aware of. You cannot share the joy of worship and service together in the Lord. You can't do that. Now, unless there is a conversion that takes place, unless that unbelieving partner becomes converted and becomes a Christian. You know, it means something to me to be able to sit in a service with my wife, and when something very special happens, I can share it with her. When we sing a song that is particularly moving, it means something to be able to share it with her. Or to hear someone making a point that we appreciate, we can kind of nudge each other and because we're enjoying that point being made. That means a lot. You won't have that. You won't have that if you marry one who is not a Christian. And another thing, if you attend worship and you have such a wonderful experience at this worship service today, the lesson moved you, the singing moved you, and you're just so full of feeling about God and your worship and everything, and you want to come home and just, you want to tell somebody, whom are you going to tell? Because so often your unbelieving partner will not understand what you're saying and would not have the wherewithal to appreciate it. You might turn to Deuteronomy chapter 7. As you're turning there, let me make the point that I do not believe that it is a sin to marry a non-Christian. I do not believe that it is a sin. The primary reason why I do not believe that it is a sin is because the New Testament contemplates some situations where an unbeliever is married to a believer. And the advice is not to divorce, not to separate, not to part, but to remain together. So if it is a sin to marry an unbeliever, it is the only sin I know of that it is that you get into, but then you're not supposed to get out of that sin. I don't know any other sin that you get into that you're not supposed to get out of. Any sin I know of, you're to renounce. And yet the Bible clearly says that is not to be done in the case of a marriage between a believer and an unbeliever. So I do not believe that it is a sin. But I do believe that it is folly. It is folly. It is dangerous. It is highly unwise to do so. And let me show you why. The situation in the Old Testament is not exactly parallel with that of the New. But there is a point or two of similarity that I'd like you to consider. In Deuteronomy 7, verses 3 and 4, Moses said to Israel, "Neither shalt thou make marriages with them." Let me back up just a little bit to get the full meaning of the context here. "When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, and shall cast out many nations before thee, the Hittite, and the Girgashite, and the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. And when Jehovah thy God shall deliver them up before thee, and thou shalt smite them, when thou shalt utterly destroy them, thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them." Now listen to this part. "Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son." There's the warning. Now listen, because there is a reason given. "For he will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you, and he will destroy thee quickly." So this warning was given to the children of Israel as they were going to cross over the Jordan, and they would be amongst the various peoples named here. These were all pagan peoples. They did not worship the Lord. He says, do not intermarry with them. Why? For he will turn away thy son from following me. Look in Ezra chapter 9. This is another example that is very powerful. In Ezra chapter 9, verses 10 through 12, when Ezra led the second return from captivity, he found that this command, now listen, what command? The one that Moses had uttered in Deuteronomy 7. Ezra found that this command had been disregarded. It had been violated with grave results. So let's read now Ezra 9, verses 10 through 12. We find this in the prayer that Ezra utters to God. And now, O our God, what shall we say after this? In other words, after God has been so gracious to spare them and to allow them to come back. And now, O our God, what shall we say after this? For we have forsaken thy commandments, which thou hast commanded by thy servants the prophets, saying, the land unto which ye go to possess it is an unclean land, through the uncleanness of the peoples of the lands, through their abominations, which have filled it from one end to the other with their filthiness. Now therefore give not your daughters unto their sons, neither take their daughters unto your sons, nor seek their peace or their prosperity forever, that you may be strong and eat the good of the land, and leave it for an inheritance to your children forever. That's the command that they had disregarded. And they had disregarded this command with grave results. And they had to separate from those pagan wives that they had married. Turn to Nehemiah chapter 13. We have the very sobering words spoken by Nehemiah when he dealt with the same problem that Ezra did. Now bear in mind, we have the teachings of Moses on the point, the prohibitions of this intermarriage with the pagans in Deuteronomy 7. We have Ezra's dealing with the severe problem that had resulted from the violation of those commandments in Ezra 9, 10 through 12. Now look in Nehemiah chapter 13, beginning in verse 23. Nehemiah says, in those days also I saw the Jews that had married women of Ashdod, of Ammon, and of Moab, and their children spake half in the speech of Ashdod, and could not speak in the Jews' language, but according to the language of each people. Now when he spoke to them, look in verse 26. This is a very impressive example to me. Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin by these things? Yet among many nations was there no king like him. And he was beloved of his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, even him did foreign women cause to sin. Shall we then hearken unto you to do all this great evil, to trespass against our God in marrying foreign women? The power of this example is that this was Solomon. As wise as he was, and yet, when he married the many foreign women he did, the idolatrous women that he married, they ultimately led him away. Therefore, though sometimes marriages like these do work out, it is still folly to recommend them because of the dangers that are involved, because of the problems that arise. And when I have talked with a couple that married years ago, with one of them not a Christian, and finally, through the passing of time, that unbelieving partner or the non-Christian partner became a Christian. When I have talked with them now, and I ask, do you recommend that someone would marry a non-Christian? You know what they've always told me? They've always said, no, I don't recommend it, because it was too painful. It was too hard. There were too many problems. Certainly we could not recommend this as a means of evangelism. So this is the first thing that needs to be considered, but it is not the only thing by any means. Second thing I want you to consider, this is true for men and women, boys and girls, young men and young women. Even when someone claims to be a Christian, the profession to be a Christian must be carefully examined. Don't be deceived. The profession to be a Christian must be carefully examined. Because Jesus said in Matthew 7:21, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven." It is one thing to claim to be a Christian, and even to do some of the things that a Christian may do. But it is another thing to be truly committed to the principles by which a Christian lives. Jesus asked the people in Luke 6:46, "Why do you call me Lord, and you don't do the things I say?" Why is that? Jesus was pointing out the inconsistency between one who claims to be a follower of Christ and one who is. And I want you to ponder this. If you're contemplating marriage with someone who is not faithful to the Lord, the God of heaven, upon whom His eternal destiny rests, and that person is not faithful to that God, what makes you think that person will be faithful to you? That is something to bear in mind. When you marry someone, you need to marry someone who knows what a covenant is, who knows the meaning of a covenant, and intends to honor that covenant. So you have to look at more than merely the profession of being a Christian. One must know what Christian characteristics are. I have seen and known Christians marry someone who they thought was a Christian, who was supposed to be a Christian, and one wonders how they could be so mistaken. In other words, in the years gone by, I've dealt with a couple that, you know, when I met them, they had already been married and they were already in deep trouble. And so I see one of these partners that claims to be a Christian and they are just, they're a disaster. And from everything I can learn, they were a disaster clear back. And the question that I have is, how could anyone who is faithful not see that there were problems with that person? There were problems with that person's profession of Christianity. Why can you not see that? So that means that you yourself must know what a Christian is. You yourself must be one to know what one really is. And you need to observe the life that a prospective partner lives and listen to the talk of that partner. As someone has put it, I think they put it walk the walk and talk the talk. But I can adapt that a little bit. And I can say you watch the walk and you listen to the talk. That's what you need to do. Observe. Be wise. Observe. You need to have in your mind what you want out of marriage. You need to have in mind what you want in a partner, because if you wait until you are thoroughly emotionally involved with someone, then it's too late for your rational side to act. So your rational side needs to act first. You need to be thinking about these things. And then listen to the person talk. Watch the person walk. How do they live? Are they truly a Christian or are they merely claiming to be one? A third thing to look for: stability and consistency. Stability and consistency. Why? Why do I pick stability and consistency out as qualities to look for in a partner? Because these qualities indicate that a person lives by principles and not by whim. I often have somebody come to me and tell me something that I told them years ago that I have forgotten that I told them. But I was glad that I told them. Recently, I performed the wedding ceremony for a little boy that grew up at Hansville, where we were a number of years ago, and he's all grown up now and got married, and I performed that ceremony. And I think it'll be a good marriage. I hope and pray that it will. But Craig told me, he said, you know what, when I graduated, I remember what you told me at that time, and I think I wrote it in a book or something that I gave to him. And he quoted it. He said, you told me, live by principle. Live by principle. I was glad he remembered that. I was glad I told him that. And I tell you that, that you and I need to live by principle and not by whim. Not by chance. Our souls are too valuable to take chances with. And you need to look for a person who lives by principles and not by whim. What kind of a personality does your prospective partner have? Are they almost always depressed? If they're depressed constantly, just pretty well day in and day out, while you're dating them, can you guess what they're going to be after you're married? Depressed. Day in, day out, day in, day out. It would be a lot like rain all the time. I'm glad to have rain, but rain all the time gets on my nerves. And depression. You need to be careful about that and choose a person who is not just habitually depressed, habitually sad. Up and down, up and down. You never know how they're going to be. You don't know how they're going to be today. You don't know how they're going to be tomorrow. Each day is a surprise. And some surprises we don't look forward to. In Proverbs 17:22, a cheerful heart is a good medicine, but a broken spirit drieth up the bones. That's pretty good advice. You need to think about that. We're not dealing here necessarily with something that's sinful, but it has a great impact, a great power to impact your life, and you need to be aware of that. You need to think about it. You need to avoid someone who is selfish, who only thinks of self. Someone who is self-centered, you need to avoid that. I've probably told you before about the girl that I dated, and I had terribly little experience dating anybody when I left my home. I dated two girls, I think. And as I was dating this girl, she was telling me all about her previous boyfriends. All the presents they brought her all the time. She made it clear she could not expect to be happy unless she were regularly plied with presents. I broke it off. I like to give presents once in a while, but we can't live on presents, giving presents. And she had that problem. Self-centered. Unless she was being given a present every day, then life just was not worth living. She did not view herself as a mature person who had her own life to live and her own contribution to make. Avoid a person who is easily angered. If that partner is easily angered, or if you see that person easily angered, now always remember, as a rule of thumb, whatever is true before you're married, especially if it's a negative thing. I can say this especially if it's a negative thing. Whatever it is before you get married, if it's a negative thing, it will be worse after you get married. You take any negative thing you see in your partner, it will be worse after you get married. Do you know why? Because you're not trying as hard then. You've already got the partner one, be he husband or wife. You have the partner one. You don't have to try as hard. The negative qualities tend to be enhanced and emphasized. They tend to increase unless the Lord enters the picture and is able to transform the heart. If the person allows themselves to be transformed, that can happen. Lazy. Now you may say, you know, the commercials that you'll see on television. Morally, spiritually, So far as wisdom is concerned, they just make somebody want to throw up. They're that bad. Now, Sandra and I were watching one, and we were some discovery or something like that. But anyway, on the thing, there was this man sitting at a bar, and the girl. And the question was, what kind of a girl do you want? What kind of a partner do you want? You know, your mind can go back to the old songs way back many decades ago. I want a girl just like the girl that married dear old dad. You remember that old moss-covered thing, but beautiful. I still love the words of it. Beautiful thing. But in this commercial, the girl takes a can of beer. She pours the last few drops in his glass and immediately takes it and crushes it up against her forehead. Now, that's the kind you want right there. She can eat anvils and spit out tacks. Well, forgive me, but I did not want a girl who could smash a beer can against her forehead. And I fail to see what there is to recommend girl or boy who can crush a beer can against his forehead. I just apparently have missed something. But our society pictures things like, you know, here's a picture of this fella that I wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley. And he's slung all over a motorcycle. Is he exciting? Now that's the kind a girl wants right there. It's a disaster. That is an absolute complete disaster. And anybody who marries someone like that is asking for a disaster. And you see, we're tempted to think, oh, someone like that is exciting, exciting. And a lot of times we'll take lazy, thinking we're getting exciting. And after you get married, you'll find exciting wears out real quick. Exciting wears out exceptionally quick. You wouldn't believe how quickly exciting wears out when you are having to do all the work. And you are having to worry about how we're going to make it. And you are having to do everything that is done. It gets really, really old to live with a sluggard. So don't marry one. Look for someone who is energetic. What kind of a lifestyle does he or she like? Now, when Sandra married me, when we started dating, our lifestyles could not have been different. If you had seen me back then, I didn't look like some long-haired hippie because I came from the background that would not have had long hair no matter what. But you wouldn't have recognized me. And I had to do some changes before we could get together. But that's something you need to be aware of. Are your lifestyles compatible? Are you going to be able to live together? Are you marrying someone who does not know how to take care of anything? They tear up everything they get. They don't know how to take care of it. They're sloppy by nature, it seems. Again, we may not be talking about something sinful here, but we may be talking about something that will run you nuts. And you're not going to be happy. So in a lesson like this, I need to point out that that's something else you need to consider. Is your prospective partner financially responsible? 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8 says, if any provideth not for his own, and especially for his own household, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Don't marry someone who is worse than an infidel. Don't marry someone who is not financially responsible. Is he grown up, or does he still have to have his toys? That's true of men and women. Women have their toys as well. Has the woman outgrown her vanity? Is she ready to settle down and be something of substance? So you have to consider it both ways. If you're dating somebody and you hear all the time their checks are bouncing, 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 they just have a terrible time. They're just, every time they turn around, you know what's going to happen after you get married? Bounce, bounce, bounce. Except then it won't be just their name. It'll be yours too. Someone with enough confidence to do their work, but not an arrogant person who must constantly demonstrate to all around that he or she is superior to the other. And pity the person whose partner must always demonstrate his or her superiority over that partner. The last point that I want to make, a quality. These are all qualities. These are all things for you to look for and think about in getting married and selecting a prospective partner. One of the most important, just so far as happiness and getting along together and so on is concerned, is look for the quality of consideration. Consideration. And it's an easy quality to see. All you have to do is watch that person around other people. Watch that girl around her parents. How does she relate to her dad? How does she relate to others? Watch that. With men, watch the way they deal with their mother. Watch the way they deal with their sister. Watch the way they deal with women in general. While you want your husband to be considerate, you don't want him to be a flirt. If he's a flirt before he marries, he'll be a flirt after one if you're not careful. So you want someone who is considerate and considerate of you. But you can observe him and you can see whether he is considerate. No other quality proves the presence of love as surely as consideration. Because you know what Jesus said in Matthew 7 and verse 12, the so-called golden rule? You know what the heart of that is? Consideration. All things therefore whatsoever ye would that men should do unto you, even so do ye also unto them. There's the heart of it. That one great principle is at the heart of successful human relationships. All things therefore whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, even so do ye also unto them. And that certainly is true of husbands and wives. Avoid needless criticism of each other, especially before others. Eliminate sarcasm and picking each other to pieces. That is never good. It is never good. Avoid the kind of joking some couples do, which is thinly disguised attacks on one another. Sandra and I, when we got married, we lived in a town preaching, and there was a couple there, and he only had about 5 jokes in his repertoire, and he told them endlessly over and over again. They were so clever. He would ask his wife, "Honey, what is that you're using? What are you using on your face? A Brillo pad?" Ha, 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 ha. She didn't like that. I could tell she didn't like it. Would it surprise you to know that I've never done that with Sandra? Now, there's more than one reason why I've never done that with Sandra. But I haven't. I don't want to do that. Avoid things that hurt. Avoid a partner who does things that hurts. And you know, in all of these things I've said, even though we're talking primarily to those who are looking for marriage partners, who will be considering marriage partners, at the same time, do you realize that every point that I've made, virtually every point that I've made, can be taken by those of us who are married, and we can apply these thoughts. If I'm not what I ought to be, I can fix it. If you're not what you ought to be, you can fix it. And we can work and we can grow. And I'm very thankful for that. I'm very thankful with those who have been patient with me, especially Sandra. And we can do that, and we can grow. And we who are married, who are not now in the market of considering a marriage partner, what we need to do is to say, I want to make myself a more worthy partner than I am Whether we are a husband or a wife, we need to take that view toward these things and work on making ourselves the very best husband or wife that we can be by developing these qualities if we don't have them, by improving them if we do have them. We can do that. It is sad that so many people in our society today have no way of knowing what good qualities are. That's a very sad thing. It used to be that you could just pretty well assume that a mother was one of the noblest things in creation. That is no longer the case. And I'm so sad about that. I'm so sorry. Many people do not have parents to set an example of what marriage really should be. Also, so many today do not know the Scriptures. But you can learn what the qualities are that a person needs to have. You need to learn what those qualities are and have them yourself. But you need to know what they are so that you can look for them in others. You need to study carefully what the Scriptures say about character and quality. And I know it doesn't sound romantic to be talking about quality of character. But I also assure you that in your whole life, nothing will mean more to you than seeking for quality and character in a partner that you're going to marry. Study especially the book of Proverbs. It is filled with information on this subject. Proverbs 31 is the fullest discussion of a worthy woman. In fact, that's how the section begins there in Proverbs 31. A worthy woman who can find her price is far above rubies. And then he goes on to describe that worthy woman. Women and men, you need to read Job 31 also. We men need to read Job 31 because Job 31 sets before us a kind of a credo, a creed for what a man should be. Job 31, read that. And make yourself the man that is described there as Job talks about his quality of life and his character. And women, read Job 31 so you will know what a good man is. And then also read the passages in the New Testament which describe life and character and conduct in different ways, setting forth what is sin and setting forth what is good, such as Galatians 5, 19 through 23. Colossians 3, verses 5 through 14. And many other passages as well. Psalm 15 is a wonderful psalm. Lord, who shall sojourn in your tabernacle? Who shall dwell in your holy hill? Who's going to live there? He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh truth in his heart, he that slandereth not with his tongue, nor doeth evil to his friend, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a reprobate is despised, but who honoreth them that fear the Lord, he that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not, he that putteth not out his money to interest, nor taketh reward against the innocent, he that doeth these things shall never be moved. We all must seek to live lives of principle and develop character. We need not be interested in being characters, but having character. And then when we seek someone to marry, we need to look for a person who likewise lives by principle and a person who has character. So this lesson tonight has been devoted to marriage. Who is a prospect? Who's a candidate? What do you look for? And I hope that the lesson will help. I know it can help because I know a lot of people who follow this approach and they have a good marriage. Now this is not all of it. You have to work on it all along. As I said in the wedding ceremony I did a few days ago, marriage is not a weed that grows unattended. It is a garden that must be nurtured and cultivated. In our study tonight, we have not studied how to be a Christian, but we have pointed out the importance of being one. If you're not a Christian tonight, not just for marriage, but for your own soul's sake, you need to become one. You need to be a Christian. You need to become one because you're lost. You're lost. But you can be saved, and God wants you to be saved. He would have you to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth. So if you will believe that Jesus is the Christ, then repent of your sins and confess your faith and be baptized to have your sins forgiven. And come to the Lord as we stand and sing.